This.
Hey, how you doing? What are you doing? Hey, how you doing? Hey, how you doing?
Is Felger and Mads.
What?
On 98.5.
Unbelievable.
The Sports Hub.
Watch this. Talib reaches in, grabbed a go chain,
yeah,
and ripped it apart. Crabtree is in disbelief.
Oh no, man, he just been wearing that chain all year, man. It just been growing on me. So I said, if he wear that chain in front of me, I'm gonna snatch it off. So he wore it in front of me, so I had to snatch it off.
What did he say to you?
Well, he started crying to the ref. He called for the ref. Ref, he ain't said nothing to me though.
Hey guys, thank you so much for taking my call. I really appreciate it. Listen, we've been going back and forth the last couple of weeks with all the holes that the Pats have in their defense and everything else and how they're going to fix them. That's why I know it's sacrilege, but I truly believe the best deal was to deal Brady. I know he has something left, which is actually what you want when you deal somebody. They definitely would have gotten more than what they would have gotten for Jimmy G.
So let me stop you, Jay. Of course they would have. Of course they would have. We've been having this. We'll have this debate forever. Forever. I mean, you traded 10 years of the next guy for 3 years of the guy that you have. And there's no guarantees with the next guy. There's guarantees with Brady that you're going to be right there knocking at the door for 3 more years. So what would you rather have? 3 years of guaranteed success versus 10 of probable success, call it.
I'll take the 10.
And they chose the 3.
And I would take the 3. Okay. I'm biased. I'll always be a Brady guy.
This is where I disagree with you, though. I'm not even sure the 3 is guaranteed. But anyway, I'll give you the 3. Okay? Maybe 1's guaranteed of those 3. Maybe 2. Who knows? Clearly they weren't going to do it. They weren't going to trade Brady, clearly, because they kept him.
But they could have totally flipped this into the next generation with no guarantees. But they could have dealt Brady and gotten a motherload of draft picks. If they're having problems with Rob Gronkowski, they could have dealt Rob Gronkowski out of motherload of draft picks. They could have had Bill see the transition, or they could have gone straight to Josh. I mean, there's a whole raft of things they could have done, which would have set them up for the next 10 years of success. They could have, with no guarantees. Maybe that transition gets you a team for the next 10 years that's good but not great, and you never win again.
But so much of that to me is that Robert Kraft was not going to deal with the mutiny again from the fan base. Because, again, look at how people reacted that he wouldn't fight the league and rattle his sword and go against them and become the next Al Davis. I don't think he wanted to deal with that.
And I absolutely agree that Robert Kraft did not want to be the guy that traded Tom Brady.
So what if that decision, what if 3 years of Brady versus 10 of Garoppolo ends up costing you Belichick too?
Is it
still the same deal?
I think it has.
Okay, but I'm asking, does a fan go into that saying, oh, well, you mean I only get Belichick for, like,
now? Well, ask Jim. He would have taken the 3.
If Belichick bails after this year.
Because of that, is it still worth it?
And we find that it's because it's still worth it, right?
Is Brady still playing?
Yes.
Yeah, then I'm fine with that.
But he's with McDaniels, not Belichick.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
See, that makes it like a slam dunk.
Here is Pete in Delaware. Pete in Delaware joins us next year on Felger and Maserati. Hi, Pete. What do you got?
Hey, guys. I was looking at the cap from last year to this year with the players, and Brady went up from 14 to 22 this year on the cap hitting it. A few other players went up. And, you know, you look at Nate Solder, they only paid their offensive line totally last year like $15 million. They're going to pay him $12 million now? And they don't have much room. And I just think Bill, he got these contracts, they were all escalating this year, which I understand that happens, but how do you not prepare a little bit better for this? And then the Brandon Cooks thing drives me crazy. He's making like 1.5, and then he has this huge jump this year, and now we're talking about trading him. Why didn't you think about that last year?
So the Cooks trade I never liked from day one. I mean, I didn't really rip it because they like the player, and, you know, at this point you just sort of go with what Bill does. But a first-round pick for a receiver, like on this team that was coming off a Super Bowl and scored 1 million points? Like, why all of a sudden that caller in the first segment? Why do you need the player that takes the top off the defense on this particular offense? The Patriots have almost never had it. They didn't have it before Randy Moss, and they haven't had it since. And has that prevented them?
No.
From scoring 1 billion points? And I mean, you don't need the guy to stretch the field. You don't. And Gronk does it half the time anyway, if you really need it. So, like, why was a first-round pick for that?
It's aggravating. It really is. And I thought he was going to do so much more here. And I thought he was going to even be utilized a little bit more. I didn't need him to take the top off the defense. How about just picking up a 3rd and 7 and maybe getting hit over the middle, you know, instead of turtling like he did?
Well, those are the guys I like. Yeah, I mean, he did stretch the field. I felt he did. But so what?
But I'd much rather, as much as I love a guy like Randy Moss, for this offense and this team, give me one of those guys. Give me Danny Amendola time and time again. A guy that's going to be willing to take a hit and not turtle on a 3rd and 6 over the middle.
See, I think Belichick was starting to play on the roster long-term for Garoppolo. That's what I think. I think he wanted Cooks with Garoppolo.
Here's Jim in Beverly. Hi, Jim.
Hey, what do you say, guys? Hey, I haven't heard too many people talk about this. What do you think about this? With Robert Kraft being so busy, you know, out in L.A. with his new baby and going to the Oscars and everything, is Jonathan Kraft taking over the reins? And maybe Bill doesn't like that. Maybe Bill doesn't like working for Jonathan, who is probably tight with Josh because they're closer in age. And Bill's kicking back a little because didn't he do that with the Jets? Wasn't that one of his reasons?
Yeah, so let me just stop you, Jim. I mean, there's a dynamic there. Yes, for sure. That whether he likes Robert, doesn't like John, like, just leave that out. Bill signed and went to work for Robert Kraft. That's who he has a relationship with. That's who his boss has been. That's who he answers to, and that's his guy. And if that changes in any way, of course that changes Bill's thinking.
I mean, that's in part why he left the Jets.
It's a big part. He didn't trust the ownership with the Jets. He trusted Robert Kraft. So his deal is with Kraft. Now if it's Jonathan, well, this isn't the guy that I signed on with. It's his son. It's a craft, but this is still not. So, of course, I think that dynamic exists all over the place.
Huge.
And so I think it's definitely a factor. And even though Robert is still the man, and he's still the patriarch, and he's still there, he's there less. Even though it still has to pass through Robert's desk, you know, Robert's in charge. What if he's there less? What if he's just there less? And something comes up, they have to sign a mid-level guy, and they have to get everything approved. They got to kick it upstairs somewhere, and Robert's not there. And now you have to, and now there's just more days where it's Jonathan. And Bill's like, well, I didn't sign up with this guy. I signed up with the other guy.
Oh, I think it's a huge thing. I mean, I do. I think it's huge. Because, again, let the Jets thing be instructive. That at the time when they made the deal that Belichick would become head coach when Parcells moved on, that whole deal was made with Leon Hess. And at the time, they ended up, who were the bidders again? Woody Johnson and Dolan, right? So the ownership of the team was going to change, and Belichick said, I'm not working for these guys. That wasn't the deal. He was out. Once the ownership changes, and even if it is in the same family, hell yeah.
So I don't know what the specific dynamics are, caller, but it's right to bring up. There's an issue in there or something worth paying attention to. Carol in the car. Go ahead, Carol.
How's it going, guys?
Matt, good, Carol.
Spot on with Huggy Bear analogy with Tlaib exactly reminds me of him to the T.
But hey, Carol, do you mind if I ask how old you are? I know it's rude, but
58.
No, 58. No, thank you. Our demo's 25 to 54. Thank you, Bass.
Yeah, but
no
I
problem.
You guys every day. I'm partying. All right. My question to you is: I would take Sherman without a doubt, but I'm nervous about his injury. So, do you think Tlaib is a better option, or is Sherman an okay option?
Yes. So Carol, injured? Like. Yeah, what I do in this, I say pretend they're both totally healthy. Because if Sherman's not healthy, of course, no Sherman. If those Achilles are issues, no, it's not even a consideration. Like, it's only worth having this debate and talking about it if you assume both are healthy. If one's healthy and one's not, you're not picking the guy that's not healthy. Like, duh, of course.
Tlaib's more dynamic. Sherman's more consistent, I think. And to me, ultimately, that's why they would pick Sherman. I like Tlaib. Again, I was looking it up a second ago because I remember the number was ridiculous. Tlaib has 10 interception returns for touchdowns in his career. 10!
That's a huge number.
That is ridiculous.
How many years he's been in the league? Is that like one a year?
I mean, basically, it is. It's pretty close to one a year. I mean, every year he's going to give you a pick six, pretty much. It's 11 years in the league. So, actually 10, because one of those years was double. He was part Tampa, part New England. So, 10 touchdowns in 10 years. Sherman's got 2.
Okay.
And I'm not saying Sherman's a bum because of it.
When both,
I don't think Revis had all that many.
When both players are at their absolute ceiling, who's better?
Sherman.
I agree.
See, I think Tlaib.
I think Sherman.
I do. I
you
think
like Tlaib. The bigger body. I think just from a
they're
pure
similar size though,
football
Jim.
IQ, I think Sherman's the smarter player.
Tlaib's a badass.
No, I know. I love them both.
At his, I mean, he gets near the ball, he's taking it to the house too. He's a badass.
I saw someone tweet this too because
he's mean.
I'm concerned about that Sherman injury, but this guy tweeted, for those worried about the Sherman injury, look no further than Brent Grimes. In the 5 seasons since he tore his Achilles, he's missed a grand total of 4 games. He was also 29 when he tore his Achilles, same age as Sherman.
I just hate the Achilles because that ends the conversation. There's nothing left to talk about. If his Achilles are bad, you're not signing him, and we're not even talking about it. We'll just stop. We'll move on.
See,
we'll,
I think the
we'll
Achilles...
talk about the Red Sox bullpen. Like, I mean, you have to... If he's healthy, then we discuss this. If he's not, so, like, obviously, it's just, like, sort of a given.
See, to me, the Achilles helps Sherman right now because I think he's going to cost less as a result of it. And so, to me, now it becomes, you know, Sherman with incentives or Rakib Tlaib guaranteed. And I think they're going to pick Sherman with incentives. I do. I think that that's made to order for them.
Dan and Quincy, you're up next. Are you able to go forward and give me something from today or going forward, or are you going to go back 2 days to something Maz said? Because if you're going back 2 days, we don't have time for it.
All right. Two of my favorite players in the league, and they both play for Seattle. One is Russell Wilson, and the other one is Richard Sherman. How's that for today for you, Felger?
Love it. Okay? Go.
Okay? So I would love – and by the way, I didn't hear any complaints about Bill Belichick, the GM, last year before the season started. In fact, you took more 19-0 calls last year in August than you did the entire 07 season.
And sure, but didn't he have a bad year, Danny? Danny, didn't he have a bad year as a GM?
I wanted to lose one.
Danny.
That's how great of an offseason you thought he had.
Did he have a bad year as a GM?
You, in hindsight, he probably did.
Of course. Yes, well, everything's in hindsight.
You guys don't say that. You don't say, hey, listen, I bought into it last year. Brandon Cooks was the darling signing of everybody, including you three. Including you three. And
now
you say he was a bust. And
not
was Roy was giving the money to Flowers. I think he gave Flowers a raise too, right? Were you against the, you were against that too, giving them the money, right?
The Trey Flowers? I don't even know what the hell you're talking about.
Which defensive lineman did Belichick just break the bank for? Or some player on defense? Maybe I got it wrong. I don't know.
They re-signed Branch.
Oh, Branch.
Yeah, Alan Branch last year for 2 years.
I agree with that. Branch is a good player. He's a good friggin' player.
Danny, and I was fine with that too, but Branch went the other way. So everything's judged in hindsight.
I understand that. I understand it, but the intent was there. You never know how anything's going to work out.
Danny, the intent is always there. Grady Little thought he was doing the right thing, leaving Pedro in that game. We're not allowed to judge it in hindsight? That's how you judge anything.
So look, I like the price I thought was high, but I thought Cooks was a good player when they brought him in here.
Everybody
having watched,
did. I'm not saying don't have a right to comment on the results of the signings. I'm saying I want to know what your previous opinion of that those signings were last year. According to everybody in Sycophant Nation, they were going 19-0 based on Bill Belichick. Which one do you want? Do you want them to go all in with veterans to satisfy Brady's window, or do you want them to go draft picks? You got to tell me. And you don't have the luxury to see how Garoppolo played in San Francisco and then want the picks in return after you've already seen him play.
Yes,
it
you do,
work
Danny.
That way.
That's exactly how it works. It's how you judge anything. The Bruins thought they were doing the right thing when they traded Tyler Seguin for Louis Erickson. The intent was there, Danny. They thought they were doing the right thing. You're not. The only way you know when you have won or lost something or did the right thing or wrong thing is when you see it play out. Everything's in hindsight. That's how you judge. So, no. We're doing it the way you do it. Bill's coming off a rough year as a GM. Overall, I totally trust him. He's excellent. Coming off a rough year. And beyond that, the methodology behind some of his trades and how he's making these moves, I think, has come into question, and rightfully so.
See, I look at it and I say, what did he see in Brandon Cooks? Like, Bill Belichick, of all people, what did he see in Brandon Cooks? Because after watching him, third, fourth rounder, maybe? First? No way.
And I never did a cartwheels over trading a first for a receiver.
Coney Ealy. What did Belichick think was going to happen there? Gillislee. I liked Gillislee,
same
too.
Here.
What happened there? Like, with Gillislee, I almost want to see them give him another crack. Because he didn't look like the same player. I think there was a hamstring thing in camp. And it felt to me like he was never really the same. But the Dwayne Allen deal. What did Bill see there? What did he see in Dwayne Allen? Like, that trade? You go, whoa. Like, looking back now at those players, knowing what Cooks is, knowing what Dwayne Allen is, you give up a first and a fourth for those guys.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
One fourth drum!
We're gonna run him right down their throat!
Felger.
I'm a hypocrite.
Mass.
Who cares?
Felger and Mass, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
In addition to the lateness of the check, what elevates this hit to merit supplemental discipline is a significant head contact that occurs and the force with which it is delivered. While we acknowledge Backus's attempt to contort his body in a way that might minimize the force of the hit, what results is a hit with substantial and forceful contact to Nielsen's head. To summarize, this is interference. Nielsen suffered an injury on the play. Backus has been neither fined nor suspended previously in his 848-game NHL career. The Department of Player Safety has suspended David Backus for 3 games.
David Backus' 3-game suspension came down yesterday during our program. It blew me away then. It still blows me away now how severe that was for that hit. And then it's really driven home when, again, in that video by the NHL Office of Discipline, they point out that David Backus has not been fined nor suspended, but not even fined, in his 848-game NHL career. And again, this is a guy who plays a hard, heavy, big-hitting game.
Almost 2,500 hits in his career.
Okay, so this is someone who is constantly mixing it up and constantly, you know, a candidate to be suspended for some sort of hit because he's a very physical player. How many years has he been in the league? Do you have it in front of you?
I don't, but okay.
That would be probably, it's 10 years. I mean, if it's 800-something games and there's 82 games a year, I think I can do that math. It's somewhere, so he's been in the league for about a decade and mixing it up constantly. And he has not only not been suspended, he's never been fined.
12 years.
12 effing years. The guy's never been fined. And as our good caller, Wayne Engrafton, said yesterday, he got hit harder by his mother when he was a kid than that shot that he gave to whoever that was on Detroit. No priors, and he gets 3 games for that. That when you first announced it, I'm like, what?
Yeah, without a track record, it's excessive. Give the guy the benefit of the doubt.
He deserves something.
A game.
Yeah, maybe two. But I just think, you know, to me, he deserves something. I when it happened, I thought he's going to get something. And when you watch the video of it, and they emphasize this, and obviously it's slow-mo, too. The puck was long gone.
It's just
he hit him high.
It's way too late. And but, you know, I mean, I agree. And even the, again, I forget the guy's name was reading it. But he targeted the head-ish. He tried to shy away from the head, really, when he got there. It was just egregiously late. I think that was the worst part of it.
So Backus said, you know, that he was trying to avoid the guy, you know, and he feels bad that the guy's hurt. Backus said all the right things. I mean, he's that kind of guy anyway, right? He's an upstanding, reputable player, all of that stuff. But to me, you know, he made the comment today when they asked him about it that, you know, if they're trying to teach a lesson, well, yeah, they are. That's the whole point. They are trying to teach a lesson. They're legislating these hits out of the game. You go anywhere near that area, you're going to get popped.
Is he appealing?
He can't. It's got to be 6 or more to appeal.
Is that right?
Yes. And I made the same mistake. I said if I were him, I'd appeal, knock it down to 2, but you can't appeal anything that is, unless it is 6 games or more. Marchand couldn't appeal his either because he was 5. So unless it's a 6 game, you can't appeal. That's the way the CBA is written.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't even know that. All right, so there it is, 3 games. Egregious to me. If you want to say he deserves something, fine, because of the current climate. But, you know, and then, you know, a lot of Bruins fans are crying about, well, what about the hit on McAvoy from Hornquist? I thought they were different hits.
You know, I'm getting tired of that one, too. Everybody bitching about the McAvoy hit. The apples and oranges. First of all, the puck was at McAvoy's skates. It was at his feet. They were battling for the puck, and he was hunched over. In this case, the puck was long gone, and the guy was standing up. Like, they're two totally different plays. The next Bruins fan that whines and bitches about the fact that that Backus got suspended and Hornquist didn't, go back and watch the two plays. Okay, they're two totally different plays. It's asinine.
If you want to whine and bitch about it or challenge Maz on that, folks, 617-779-0985. I just also want to follow up on Brad Marchand, Maz. You had a great stat yesterday. Goals scored the last 3 years in the NHL. Okay, last 3 full seasons, including this one, right? So the last 2 full and then up to now this season, combined, from 2015 through present. Goals scored in the NHL. Your leader is Alex Ovechkin with 123. And he's pretty clear ahead of the next group I'm going to give you, which is Vladimir Tarasenko in St. Louis is second at 105. And then tied for third is Patrick Kane with 104 and Brad Marchand with 104.
It's unreal, right?
What a great stat. Last 3 years, Brad Marchand has scored the third most, tied for the third most goals in the NHL with Patrick effing Kane, who I think is one of the nastiest guys in the league, one of the purest, most offensively gifted guys in the NHL. Marchand has just as many goals as Patrick Kane over the last 3 years. stunning.
I mean, ridiculous. And if you were to go to just even strength goals, because a lot of Ovechkins come on the power play. He's got almost 50 power play goals, which is more than anybody in the league over that period of time. You know, again, Marchand's in the same group. It's Tarasenko, Kane, Marchand. Kane's got 77, Marchand's got 73. I mean, they're right there. He's right there with all the best guys in the league.
Staggering. If you want to go goals per game, now Marchand's missed his share of time, four suspensions. But goals per game, he has 104 goals in 208 games played. 104-208, Murray. I'm really bad with math. I can figure that one out.
It's a 41-goal season.
He scores goals at 0.5%, 50% of the time, but exactly on the button. Patrick Kane scores at 45%, 0.45. Ovechkin and Tarasenko are up there. They score. I'm sorry. I was looking at the wrong column. Ovechkin scores 0.54 goals per game, and Tarasenko's 0.46. So if you go goals per game, Marchand's second to only Ovechkin in the entire NHL over the last 3 years.
I mean, it's insane. It is. It's off the charts. And again, two of these years are after he signed his big contract. So he got the money, and he's playing better.
Felger and Mazz.
Ooh, I like this.
This is Felger and Mazz.
Part of me wants to do it just to feel what that feels like.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Ovechkin skates ahead right side. Now he'll twirl back. Let's his two teammates go in front of him. He'll poke it along the near side. Puck hit the linesman, so it's free to the Bruins. Over the line near side now, Riley Nash near circle into the slot. Krug shoots. Howard the save. Rebound. Backhand. They score! How about Brad Marchand? Make it a hat trick. Make it the game winner. Make it a sweep over the Red Wings. 6-5 Bruins over the Red Wings in overtime.
He is up with the elite of the elites. Again, goals scored the last three-plus seasons. Ovechkin, Tarasenko, Kane, and Marchand. That's it.
It's unreal, isn't it?
It's a serious group right there.
It is. It's unreal.
So, I mean, you just don't think of it. That, you know, I mean, you knew Marchand came on offensively and is a good all-around player and did it up, but you never thought just the numbers are in that category. They are. And I can't help but think that if it's impossible to believe, but he's become a better offensive player than Tyler Seguin. Tyler Seguin, again, Marchand, in the last three-plus years, has scored 104 goals, third most in the league, tied with Patrick Kane. Seguin, in that same time, 95 goals. Brad Marchand, three-plus years, has 212 points. Tyler Seguin, 207. Brad Marchand scores a goal every other game, 0.5 goals per game. Seguin, 0.43. Brad Marchand, the last 3 years, is over a point a game, 1.02 points per game. Tyler Seguin, under a point a game, 0.93. Oh, by the way, in the last 4 years, I don't have the last three in front of me, but the last four, Brad Marchand is plus 111, if you want to use the plus minus, plus 111. Seguin is plus 11. Sagan's been there 4 years. They've won one round since Tyler Seguin has gone to Dallas. So does that make you look at the trade any differently?
No.
I mean, now that we're going back and picking apart, you know, bad trades by teams here in town, you go back and look at that one differently?
No, I didn't. No. I mean, no.
He's
you should have them
so
both.
Talented.
You should have both.
So you're really? Saying? So you're saying if their line was Bergeron, Marchand, Seguin, Marchand would be the same player?
I'm saying Seguin could be on a different line. I mean, there's no guarantee that they had to be on the same line. You know, to me, you can never have too much talent. And again, one of the things that made the Seguin deal a travesty at the time was that they had signed him to a deal paying him, what, a little over $5 million a year? I mean, you'd have two of the more productive wingers in the game, and I know Sagan's playing center in Dallas, but you'd have two of the more productive forwards in the game signed for good contracts.
To me, it's still the return. It's still the return. Because I'll tell you, Tyler Seguin has not amounted to much. He really hasn't. He's not become the MVP candidate. He's not leading him to anything. He's not turned into a winner or a... He just hasn't. He's a nice player. He's not an elite guy. I mean, Brad Marchand's better offensively. Never mind in his own zone and everything else. And Seguin has meant very little to the Dallas Stars' bottom line in terms of playoff success. So you don't miss Seguin. It's just Louis Erickson, Riley Smith. Help me, Stu.
Well, Matt Frazier, wasn't
Matt
he one of
them? Matt Frazier, thank you.
And Morrow, Joe Morrow.
Joe Morrow, the D-man. Thank you. Very good, Maz. I mean, please. Please.
Oh, no, don't worry. I've got those names etched in my brain forever.
You could have
four names.
I mean, what if the trade happened and they get back two first-round picks in which they draft a young guy who's on, you know.
Charlie McAvoy and DeBrusque.
You know what I'm saying?
Of course. Totally changes your opinion of it.
So, to me, it's still about the return there. But it is interesting to think that Marchand's become a better offensive player than Tyler Seguin. Never mind everything else. So there's your Bruins Minute. We'll mix that in with our football conversation. Mike in Cape Cod wants to talk Bruins. Go ahead, Mike.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good. What do you got?
Hey, listen, I really enjoy your show. I look forward to it every day at 2 o'clock. I come home, look forward to listening, but I'm so sick of listening about the Patriots. We got the Bruins and the Celtics that are really having phenomenal years.
Okay, so give me a take, Mike.
I really want to talk about them more.
Go ahead.
This is more of a comment to the listeners that I want them to call in, and I want to listen about what's going on with them. And, you know, let's move on with the Patriots.
Okay, give me a Bruins take. Give me a Celtics take. Go ahead.
Celtics, I mean, they're a phenomenal team right now. And everybody talked about Isaiah and how he was the all-star and MVP and everything else. They were never going to win with him. When they brought Kyrie Irving in, they really improved the team. Gordon Hayward, unfortunate injury, but they're on the right track. The Bruins, obviously, nobody estimated that they would have this kind of season. They're exciting. That's a great game to watch.
Okay, so listen, since you're doing it, who's going farther in the playoffs, Mass?
Celtics, probably.
Agreed.
Yeah, Celtics.
Who has a better chance to win a championship?
Bruins.
Bruins.
Exactly. Right?
But I mean, that's just about the unpredictability of the NHL playoffs. That's all it is. There's no Golden State Warriors in the NHL.
Bruins could be one and done. They could be. There's no way the Celtics are losing to whoever is the seventh. You know, they're not losing in the first round.
I'll tell you what, all things being equal, that'll be an interesting question at the start of next year. I mean, you know, you get Gordon Hayward back, and who knows what else the Celtics do, but that's another story for another time. I just think, look, the Celtics have been playing well. They've been playing better since the break. They've also played garbage. So now they're going to start playing some better teams. You know, you're going to get Minnesota. They get a game with Washington coming up. They get another one with Oklahoma City not far after that. So they're going to start playing some better competition again. We'll get a better idea.
Tom in Exeter on the Pats. Go ahead, Tom.
Hi, guys. First off, I'm a Patriots homer, right? I'm one of those who believe Bill can do no wrong and Bill we trust. However, I am almost at the point where I'm ready to move on from Belichick for three things. You know, one was Chandler Jones. Yeah, he didn't get much return. They weren't going to sign him. I get it. Two, Garoppolo for a second rounder when they could have had the fourth pick. Really? And then three, the fact that he threw away a Super Bowl by not playing Malcolm Butler. I'm so pissed with him.
Okay, I'm going to let you go because your phone sucks, but I think that there are fans who feel that way. I think there are fans that feel that way. The Garoppolo thing to me remains the worst, and Butler's a close second. But just this building thing of him and the Jay Glazer sound that we played, he doesn't shop these picks. He doesn't shop these players. He doesn't shop for the best offers.
Okay, but he never has.
I know. That's a building frustration with me.
Okay, so that's fine, but it has never haunted him till now.
Well, and so, you know, and Glazer said that, right? Like, well, that's what they do, and it's worked out pretty well, right? Has it? Or is it just that they have Tom Brady and they give him the ball at the end of the game? I mean, and that sort of reinforces this thing. Like, how many things have they done wrong and how many mistakes have they made that just never come to the fore because Brady gets the ball with 2 minutes left and wins them the game?
A lot of them.
You know? So it's like, that still didn't make it right. Just because Brady gets the ball at the end of the game and wins it for you does not make the previous decisions right. And boy, when Brady is gone, I think we're going to have a clearer indication of just how, you know, good some of these moves are or are not around him.
Yeah, apparently it takes an egregious blunder like the one he made in the Super Bowl with Butler in order for people to open their eyes. But I go back to that whole Jonathan Baldwin, Julio Jones thing with Dimitroff and the Falcons. Like, if that didn't give you some little peek into how Belichick looks at it sometimes, and for those who don't remember, Dimitroff was thinking about trading up at the time to get Julio Jones, and he asked Belichick, what would you do? And he said, stay where you are. Jonathan Baldwin's the same player. Jonathan Baldwin. So, but this is a perfect example of why he approaches the trades the way he does. Just trade him, get a third, fourth. What's the difference? You know, we're going to have to coach the guy up when we get him here anyway. That's what his attitude is.
Okay,
and in this case, it bit him in the ass.
I'll replay that Jay Glazer sound a little bit later on coming because I think it's revealing.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
It's Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Mass.
We're mostly Patriots, but we're bi-sportual. We'll give you whatever you want. The Celtics take is really a LeBron take. And I think Jimmy wrote this email. Whoever wrote it, maybe it was Murray. I'll just read it to you. The Ringer is reporting that LeBron has a list of four teams for next year that he would go to.
It was me. I wrote it. Go.
Lakers? Oh, no wonder. Because you use your you use your little toys.
Yeah, my voice dictation, yes.
Your voice dictation. So I'll read it verbatim then. The Ringer is reporting that LeBron has a list with four teams on it for next year. Lakers, Cavaliers, Rockets, and Sixers. No way he stays with the Cavs. That means three. If he picks the Sixers, he's a wussy. West obviously has far better competition, period, stop. Best for us if he picks Philly, period, stop. Okay. Ringer's reporting LeBron has a list of four teams, Lakers, Cavs, Rockets, and Sixers.
Yep, Kevin O'Connor of the Ringer.
Best for us if he picks Philly? Why?
Get him in the conference. Absolutely.
You mean us for the talk show?
Of course. Yes, get him toe-to-toe with the Celtics.
Oh, well, you just have a Philly, you just have a Sixer in your pants for that team. You're a Sixers guy now.
Yep. That's right. That's exactly right. That's exactly what it is. I mean, how's that bad? LeBron and Kyrie, Sixers, Celtics, you know, Embiid, Tatum, like the whole nine yards. Perfect. I would love that. That would be great. That would be great theater for the Celtics and the Sixers going forward. No two ways about it. That is absolutely the best thing for us.
Yeah, good theater, and it's good for the East. But how is it for Simmons and Embiid? Because automatically, these two guys that are the process and who they're building that team around, they automatically take a backseat to LeBron.
So what?
And that hinders those guys. I thought they were building around them. It goes from something they were building to bang, you got to like win now with LeBron.
Well, it's both. I mean, again,
I thought you, as a de facto Sixers fan, would want to see those guys continue to grow, is what I'm saying.
No, I think it's both. I mean, I think that Embiid has proven that he can play now. Simmons, you know, is going to need some help anyway because he can't shoot. The one thing I wonder about there is Simmons and LeBron together because they both need the ball a lot. Right? Simmons is a passer. He's a facilitator. That's what LeBron is. So to me, I don't know how well they fit together. But LeBron and Embiid? Like, how do you not love that? Those two
keep
together.
Keep it in your pants.
Oh, my gosh. LeBron and Embiid on the same team is like, you know, it's eye-opening. And the road to the finals is easier in the East. So, again, if LeBron picks Philly, Sally.
Isn't that so weak?
You, Sally.
I'd have more respect if he went with the Lakers and, you know, I'm taking over. I'm, you know, the Sixers thing feels more like a latch-on, right? Like, this is the best young team going, so I'm just going to latch on there.
Oh, totally. And listen, don't underestimate the business ramifications of it, too. Like, when we were remember the comment he made about Ben Simmons not too long ago, like the future king or something on Twitter?
Oh, yeah, no, both him and Embiid, after they lost to him last week, he was shouting them both out on his Instagram page.
Okay, so part of me wonders is Ben Simmons is represented by the same agent who represents LeBron James. And we all know there was an investigation in the league a couple of years ago as to whether LeBron actually has a part of that agency and what the sort of arrangement is, and he was found doing nothing shady. But I always wonder, with LeBron, there's always a business aspect to everything. And so I do wonder whether that is in part why he's throwing Philly out there. Who knows?
All right, Celtics fans, do you
want Cleveland out? He's not going to Cleveland.
I agree. Do you want LeBron in the conference or not?
Oh, I would love him in the conference.
Yeah, I want him in the conference.
You do?
Yeah, and I don't think he's a wuss for staying in the East and going with the Sixers. Again, that's still basically a building team. To me, he's a wuss if he goes to Houston, which is already like, let's bring in Harden. Let's bring in CP3. Let's keep bringing in big names. That, to me, or Golden State. I know that's not part of the list, but it's been rumored before. Maybe he goes to the Warriors. Like, that's the lowest of the low.
Does LeBron, Harden, and Chris Paul compete with the Warriors?
Yep.
They do?
Oh, yeah.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, again, LeBron's the lead dog, so Harden's role changes some, but absolutely, no question about it. See, that I would sort of say, okay, that I like. Now you're going there to chase someone. You're going after someone. I get it. The Miami thing I didn't like because that to me was stacking the deck. They weren't chasing anybody. LeBron was just piling it up so he could win his first championship. That's all that was. But now there's someone in the league that's better than him. So let me go somewhere that's got some players and let's go. We're coming after you in the same conference. That I like. Philly? Oh, you wuss. If he goes to Philly, he's a wuss. He's shying away from the competition so he can tell some jackass reporter, I've been to 8 straight finals or 9 straight finals. Big deal. You're 3-5 as it is. If he went to Houston like that, I could sink my teeth into, okay, we're coming after you, Durant. We're coming after you, Curry. Like that I like.
Yeah, but he still has to even if he gets to the finals again. You know, the hump is still the Golden State Warriors.
But he gets off on telling people how many straight finals he's been to, even though he doesn't win most of the ones he gets to. Like, Philly's an easier road. It is. Pick the tougher road, you big Sally.
Okay, so there's your basketball thought of the day. Basketball minute. You want LeBron in your conference or not? Celtics fans, 617-779-0985. Back to the phones. Johnny and Waylon on the Bs. Hi, Johnny.
Hey, how you doing? Hold on.
Good, John. What do you got?
Let me take you up a speaker. Yeah, I'm calling about the Tyler Seguin and Brad Marchand. What do you mean?
Yes, John. That conversation. Go, please. Yes, what's your thought? Okay, John's just not ready to go.
Yeah,
you're welcome.
Just wasn't ready to go. Here's Mike in Boston on the Patriots. Hi, Michael.
Hey, guys. How's it going? Just so you know where I'm coming from, I think they totally botched the Garoppolo deal by not trading him at the draft. I 100% wanted them to do that. I thought it was a mistake not to. But there is an angle that I don't think anybody's really talking about why he would target San Francisco to send him to. Who was most likely and actually was leaving the Patriots this offseason?
Who?
Josh McDaniels.
Okay.
So imagine you traded him to Cleveland. And if Belichick believes in Garoppolo as much as you guys always think he does, imagine sending him to Cleveland where they go 4-12, and then
mistake.
Josh McDaniels gets hired there, and boom, now you've got McDaniels and Garoppolo in the conference.
That wouldn't worry me, Mike, or it shouldn't worry me. If I'm getting a first-round pick out of Cleveland, I'm taking my chances that Cleveland doesn't screw that up because I think Cleveland could even screw up Jimmy Garoppolo and Josh McDaniels. I would not fear Cleveland. You know, Mike, even if McDaniels and Garoppolo go there, they are so far. That is such an absolute dumpster fire, non-factor of a team that they have so far to go to challenge you. Boy, to me, I don't believe that's why he did it in the first place. I think he did it because he liked Garoppolo and he wanted to take care of him. Garoppolo wanted to go to San Fran. So he did it primarily because of that, and also because he has a good relationship with John Lynch, and he didn't have to call around the league and expose himself. You know, again, this is in his mind. And that's the number one reason he did it. But if there was any consideration because you're worried about Cleveland and Josh McDaniels, you scaredy cat. And believe me, he's not that scared.
No, I mean, as it was, you were going to have McDaniels with Andrew Luck.
And there's still no excuse for not picking up the phone from Cleveland and saying, oh, you're offering me that Houston first? Let me think about that. And then you call San Fran and you say, I'm getting a first over here. What do you got? They didn't even do that.
Well, he doesn't want to play his buddies, though. The Shanahan family with Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch can't do that.
Bingo. Oh. He's not trying to pull one over them. He likes them. It's about who his boys are and who his boys aren't. It's what that feels like that's become down there a little bit.
The other thing, too, even if he made that move to Cleveland, by the time they would actually hypothetically turn things around, would Bill even be in the league anymore?
Exactly. Please. You're running scared from the Cleveland Browns?
Ooh.
Oh, my God. Really?
I give more credence to the theory that he would send Garoppolo to San Francisco to prevent Brady from going there, for crying out loud, than I would that one. No, to me, they sent Garoppolo to San Francisco because he wanted him in a good spot and he could do a deal with Shanahan, and it was fast and it was easy.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.